This is the Ask Chef Jacob Podcast, Episode 12, Scrambled Eggs, MSG, and Tender Chicken. And here we go with another episode of Ask Chef Jacob, found online at AskChefJacob.com. Part of the StellaCorner.com educational content for your educational content cooking pleasure. That made absolutely no sense. But what does make sense is this question from Frederick Fossa. I'm not sure. It's like double S, double A, if I'm pronouncing that right. But Frederick writes in via email from, he had just read through my F is for Flavor, which is the current bonus if you sign up for our super awesome spam, newsletter list that you can find on StellaCulinary.com. I don't have a direct link because it's a IQ test. I have the email sign-up box all over the place. If you can't find it, then you don't deserve my spam. Just kidding. Please go sign up. But it's there. It's right there in the sidebar. You can find it. But so he read through my F is for Flavor, which is the first star. Great way to start the episode, huh? So Frederick read through my F is for Flavor PDF, which is the first part of my five-part F-step curriculum that I developed for our culinary bootcamp. And it's all about teaching you how to think and cook and create like a professional chef. And I say that in the sense of, you know, it's really there to get you away from having to follow other people's recipes, to kind of liberate you from those. And so now when you read a cookbook, you're looking at it from the perspective of inspiration. You know, you're not really following a recipe or thinking this recipe is like this magical formula that if you deviate from it, it's just not going to come out good. And a big part of that, a big part of making that first step is understanding flavor structure. Because once you understand flavor structure and how flavors combine, then you can paint those flavors over the appropriate technique for the product that you're cooking and basically create any dish that you really desire. So after Frederick read through, he says, I read through the F is for Flavor PDF in one sitting. It's really interesting stuff. After that, I went right to the store and bought some fish sauce and MSG. Can't wait to experiment with that now. Yada, yada, yada. And then he says, how do you get really flavorful scrambled eggs? I've tried mastering fried rice lately, and the eggs are what I just can't seem to get right. The flavor is simply too weak to stand out. The fried rice I've had in restaurants have had eggs that really popped, in line with peas, carrots, and chickens. After reading your PDF, I'm suspecting the MSG might be the key, or maybe I've simply been using too little salt. Speaking of chicken, if I want to cook using tiny pieces of slim strips, an example for a wok or some kind of pasta dish, is there any way to not have them come out dry? I've had some really tender and juicy chicken in like that in restaurants, but I have no idea how they do it. Boil in the sauce maybe, or put the pieces in brine like your chicken breast recipe. All right, Frederick, so great questions. We're going to tackle the scrambled egg one first. So every chef has a different way of doing the scrambled eggs for fried rice. Normally, though, what you will see is a tiny bit of alcohol, usually. So in the case of like Chinese-style fried rice, they'll use a Shaoxing-style cooking wine, which is a rice wine. If you don't have that, a dry sherry is a good substitute, and just a small little splash in your eggs. And then some will use some white soy, some will use some regular, just a light soy sauce for their salt content. You could sprinkle in a little MSG if you want, but it's not completely necessary. But it will give you a bit of a umami burst. But really what you're looking at is just a little bit of Shaoxing cooking wine or a dry sherry if you can't find some rice wine. And a little dash of soy. And the soy is more there for flavor than salt, because if you add enough soy to actually fully season your eggs, you're going to just it's going to be too soy-y tasting, really. A little pinch of sugar, a little pinch of salt. And the sugar is nice, too, because the sugar brings a little bit of sweetness to it. Now, a lot of people, and classically speaking, so in the French tradition, when you're scrambling eggs or making omelet, you don't add salt till the end of the scramble, because the salt will dehydrate some of the protein strands in the egg and make the egg tougher. Where in like, you know, French cuisine, when you scramble eggs, you really want like a creamy custardy style egg, and adding salt can sometimes keep that from happening. So you always want to season your normal plain scrambled eggs, like for breakfast, after you actually cook them and scramble them in the pan. For Chinese style fried rice, or really more like Chinese American style fried rice, our bastardized version that us Westerners love so much, the scrambled egg is going to be tougher in general because it just needs to stand up to the other ingredients in the stir fry in the fried rice recipe. So adding a little bit of salt, sugar, soy, Shaoxing cooking wine is going to help make that egg a little more flavorful. And then you want to make sure you scramble the egg separately. I see a lot of recipes where they say, you know, add the egg directly into like a hole that you make in the rice while it's still in the wok, then scramble it and fold it in. And that just gets messy and it doesn't really let the egg be the egg. Some people do it like that. If it works for you, that's fine. But you're going to find that you're going to have a lot better luck with this if you scramble the egg separately before you stir fry the rest of your ingredients and then add the chopped up scrambled egg back to your wok right at the end. Now, as far as the little tender pieces of chicken meat go, or just tender pieces of meat in general, specifically in Chinese cuisine, and especially so in Chinese American cuisine, where you have like your broccoli beef and your little strips of chicken and the chow mein, they're all nice and tender. This comes from a process called velveting. And velveting is a marination plus cooking step. And I'm going to walk you through it real quick so you can better understand it. But what we use a lot in our restaurant is we use alkaline brines and alkaline marinades. And this isn't on the radar for a lot of people. Most marinades usually have, you see a lot of acid or alcohol-based marinades. So you'll see people marinating in buttermilk or yogurt, you know, both of which are acidic. People will be adding lemon juice to their marinades or other forms of citrus juice. And the acid or the alcohol, like a red wine marinade or a white wine marinade or even like a vodka or Armagnac marinade, what they do is they partially denature the protein strands, which is technically it's cooking the protein, kind of, sort of. And if it's marinated for a short period of time, then this can have a good effect. It'll make the product more tender. It'll also help to break down collagen, which is the connective tissue that makes meat tough and chewy. So you'll see that used a lot. And you also sometimes see actual meat tenderizers in your store. And these use enzymes that come from, you know, papaya or fig or pineapple. And they're mixed into a salt mix. And those enzymes will actually go to work and break down the connective tissue and the protein filaments, making your steak more tender. Now, what's seen less, at least in Western-style cooking, is actually raising the pH of your meat, which can also have a tenderizing effect. And this gives it a very aromatic quality because of the Maillard reaction. When the Maillard reaction occurs, actually browning will happen. And the Maillard reaction is browning. So browning will happen at a lower temperature or more readily when the pH of something is raised. And conversely, when you drop the pH, when you make something more acidic, it will take higher temperatures to make it brown. So when you brown meat that's been treated with an alkaline marinade or an alkaline brine, you're going to get some really nice aromatic qualities, and it's going to brown very easily in your pan. So one of the strategies for this is we use an alkaline brine all the time for a lot of different meats. My favorite meats to use it on are pork tenderloins, chicken breasts, and actually beef roast. So if you have like a hunk of roast beef that you're going to slow roast in your oven, I've had really good outcomes or results with an alkaline brine, which is strange because I normally never will brine beef, but on this rare occasion I do. And the alkalinity helps a lot. It helps to tenderize and it gives it this really nice aromatic quality. But that's something for another podcast. So in Chinese cooking, in the velveting process, what they do is they use egg whites because egg whites and eggs in general have a higher pH. So they'll take the egg whites, and sometimes they'll use whole eggs. It all depends on the chef and their approach. And they'll take the egg whites and they'll beat them up. They'll take the whole egg and they'll beat it up and scramble it. And then they'll coat the meat in this. So the raw meat. So they'll slice the meat really thin and they coat the meat in this egg white mixture. And the alkalinity of the egg will help to tenderize that meat. Now, sometimes too, for extra tenderness, they'll still add some baking soda, which is what we use in our alkaline brine. So for a normal brine, we use water as our base. So water is 100%. So again, this is using the baker's percentage, which if you've listened to this podcast, I've mentioned before, and at this point, if you haven't gone to stellacorner.com/SB and watch our baker's percentage video, you might be a little bit lost. But for our basic brine, we use 100% water, 5% salt, 3% sugar. And to make an alkaline brine, we'll use 0.5% baking soda, which will give a really nice tenderness. So in the same thing with velveting, when you have those thinly sliced pieces of meat that you're going to use later for your stir fry, you'll coat them in the egg white, and then sometimes, optionally, you'll add a little pinch of baking soda, which is going to give it just a little extra tenderness. Now, if you add too much baking soda, you do run the risk of making your food or your meat taste soapy. And also, too, it can over-marinate and make it mushy, which you don't want either. Now, the next step is they will add a little bit of just seasoning. So soy, again, the Shaoxing cooking wine, white pepper is used quite a bit, minced ginger, minced garlic, which really less at this stage because the garlic and ginger might burn during this cooking process. But you can add various ingredients, but specifically soy, white pepper, and a little bit of cooking wine are all commonly added. Now, you'll let this sit in the marinade, and sometimes you'll add just a tiny bit of cornstarch at this stage. And what this does is the cornstarch will help the egg white cling to the meat. But usually, I personally don't add cornstarch at this stage in velveting. I'll let the meat marinate first. The next step past this is once the meat has marinated, and it depends, but usually a couple hours is good if you have real thin slices of meat. You mix in cornstarch, just enough to form like a really light coating or batter on the meat. And then once you have that cornstarch fully incorporated, you just add a spoonful, mix it in, add another spoonful, mix it in, until you have like a medium body paste, basically, on the surface of your meat. Then you want to add a little bit of oil directly to that meat and stir that in. What that's going to do is that oil is going to help to coat the outside of that cornstarch coating and keep the meat from clumping together. Now, this meat is then cooked in oil at about 250 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a par fry. And what you're trying to do here is drop it into oil just long enough to set that outer starch coating. Now, here's a mistake that a lot of people make is people think that they can use water for velveting, and it's completely false. The results aren't that good because the cornstarch dissolves in water very easily. So as you place your marinated mixture that has that cornstarch coating into boiling water, it just boils into the water and dissolves, and then it starts to foam and froth, and now you have a big mess on your stove as that water boils over. So instead, you want to just in small batches drop your coated meat into 250 degree Fahrenheit oil and cook it for about 60 to 90 seconds, just long enough to set that outer coating. And you use some like a pair of chopsticks to kind of move the meat around to make sure it's not sticking together. Now, using what we call a spider, which is basically a wire mesh strainer, strain out the meat, drain it on a sheet tray lined with paper towels, and then fry any more meat that you have if you're working in batches, and let that chill. Now, an optional step from here that is sometimes done, which is why I sometimes think people confuse the fact that you can velvet in boiling water. The palate was getting a little dry there. Is you take the par cooked or velveted meat and then drop that into boiling water. So you've already cooked in the oil. You've already set that outer starch, cornstarch coating. And then from here, you can just briefly drop it into boiling water for 15 to 20 seconds. And that's going to be enough to remove some excess oil from the coating, which can sometimes, if you have excess oil in the coating, it'll make the food seem kind of greasy. So that's an optional step. So if you're having issues with your stir fries and it's kind of tasting kind of greasy, then that's a step that you can use. a lot of times I'm not finding that it's super necessary to do. So at that point, what you would normally do is do your normal stir fry technique where you get your hot wok, you get your oil hot in the wok, stir fry your vegetables. Then once your vegetables are stir fried and they have that nice color, you throw in your meat that's already velveted, and then you finish with just a little bit of sauce that you thicken with the cornstarch. Whatever your sauce recipe is for your stir fry, throw that in, thicken with a tiny bit of cornstarch, and then you continue to mix together in the wok and stir fry. Now, what this does is that first you have the alkaline marinade that has tenderized the meat, but then you also have that very light, almost imperceptible starch coating. And when velveting is done right, you can't even really tell that there's like this starchy thin coating on the outside, but there is, and there's just enough to allow the sauce to really cling to it. And that sauce, when it clings to that starchy exterior coating of the velveted meat, will give you the impression that it's very, very moist. And then you have the added tenderness from the alkaline marinade, and that's why it's so delicious. That's why we love it so much. So that's the velveting process. I do intend on shooting a video on this in an upcoming series, because it's definitely an important concept to understand. But, you know, if you go to, there's actually a really great video. What is this? So search on YouTube, search The Art of Cooking. And from what I gather, this guy does he basically works at, owns, runs American Chinese style takeout place. And he has a lot of really cool techniques on there, like the velveting, like the sauces, like stir frying and woks. And if that's something that you're interested in, I've been really impressed with just his knowledge. I mean, the guy knows what he's talking about. So head on over to theartofcooking.com, I think it is. If not, just go to YouTube and search out The Art of Cooking, and his videos will pop up. But he has a lot of videos, again, that demonstrate velveting and demonstrate a lot of our classic favorites when it comes to the American Chinese style takeout of, you know, broccoli beef and sweet and sour chicken. So, and the recipes are solid, the technique's solid. So that's a good starting point if you need a visual on the whole alkaline marinades and velveting approach. And that's it for this episode of the Ask Chef Jacob podcast. Thanks once again for joining me. If you want to submit an audio question, head on over to AskChefJacob.com, and you can do it right there on that page. You can also email me, Jacob@StellaCulinary.com. Sign up for our free email newsletter at StellaCulinary.com to get F is for Flavor, the free PDF download. And you can always tweet me, @ChefJacob.